Are you passionate about making a difference through design? Join us at the Human Centered Design Network's Circle, a new private community for changemakers just like you. Connect with like-minded professionals, gain exclusive rights to monthly learning opportunities, and lead the change in human-centered design. For more information, see thisishcd.com. Now, let's get back into that episode.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the Doing Design podcast on This Is HCD, hosted by all the world's best live design and innovation trainers at thisisdoing.com. Now, for regular listeners, you know what we do at thisisdoing.com, but it's the home of many of the world's best trainers in the spaces of design research, service design, user experience design, content design, and more. Now, in this experience, I speak with the brilliant Jerry McGovern, the creator of the Top Tasks Method and author of the latest book, Worldwide Waste. And we talk about the story behind his exciting new course, and it's a very much needed course, called Earth Experience Design. And we answer some of the community-based questions about this topic, as well as talk about the disassociation of behaviours that persist within the creators of online products and tools. Now look, for more information on this course, see the link in the show notes. So let's just jump straight in. Jerry, how are things? Great to have you on the Doing Design podcast.
Not too bad, Joe, considering this crazy world we're living in, and really delighted to be chatting with you again.
I know, yeah. Well, we're going to be chatting a bit more around Earth Experience Design, the course that you're launching in January. But you're coming live from Brazil, Jerry. Whereabouts in Brazil are you at the moment?
Well, my wife is Brazilian, so we hadn't been back to the family for a number of years, so we're staying at the moment in Recife.
Right. And what was the experience like of flying from presumably Ireland back over to Brazil? What was it like? How was the flight?
You know, it was a little bit, you know, you had to be very careful and cautious. But, you know, it was a bit of a surreal experience.
Yeah.
In the process.
Lots of, did you have to wear the mask for the full flight? I presume it is.
We did, yeah.
It's crazy. Was the flight full? Was it full of people or is it?
It was reasonably full, yeah. It was fairly full, yeah.
It's something like, I think most people at this time of year would either be doing one or two things. They'd be getting ready to have Christmas at home, or usually looking to go away and make best use of the time. But I don't know. I think maybe you and one other person I know has taken a flight in the last year, which is I don't know how we'll approach it in the future. But it's something that I'd love to get back to that point of being able to fly and enjoy the good weather and visit Brazil, for instance, it's on my list.
Well, we see, yeah, I mean, it's a kind of, you know, in relation to the topic, like I used to travel and fly all the time because of, you know, the
work,
the clients and the work. But, you know, it's something that I'm looking at seriously, you know, basically eliminating all business flight and really only traveling for family reasons, or, you know, just to maybe go to Brazil every couple of years or stuff like that. Because, you know, the impact of flying is enormous.
Absolutely.
You know, on the climate. And these are things that I've never even thought about three or four years ago. And you really have to begin to question so many things. And why you need to do them. So I think the world changes, or that I think we're thinking that, you know, if we do, you know, come to Brazil, you know, in the future, we're staying for about 3 or 4 months, so we stay for a significant period of time,
yeah,
so to speak,
to maximize
and, you know, rather than, you know, going over on a regular basis, so to speak. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of issues that, you know, certainly I find myself examining that I really didn't think that much about, you know, up until a couple of years ago.
And I think there's a really nice kind of parallel between what we're going to end up speaking about in a few minutes. But I was the same. I lived in Australia for 13 years or something, all up in the last 15 or 16 years. And flying back and forth to Ireland was just like, my biggest obstacle to doing that was usually time off work, or price of flights and so forth. And the impact of it was like a little tick box on the UI whenever I was booking my flights. And would you like to offset your carbon for this flight? And I'm like, yeah, now it feels better. I've done it. I've paid it. Like, so I've paid my ethical tax and it's gone. But I think what the pandemic has given us this sense of perspective and allowed us to take a step back and reflect and question, you know, well, what can we be doing and what should we be doing? And it's a nice kind of prelude to the Earth Experience Design course that you've been talking to me about this for a long time. Definitely, you were one of the first people in my ear. And I was just kind of going, yeah, that's interesting, all right. Like, I don't know what the community would be thinking about this. But as we can see, Jerry, you know, we put it up on LinkedIn and we put it out on Twitter and we put it out in our own communities. It's something that's people are starting to really, really think about. But what is it about the whole kind of invisible side of our behaviors? Why is it still a thing that people don't really get or really want to approach and talk about? What is it? What's holding us back, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was actually, when you asked, was there any questions? You got a very interesting question, you know. What was it that, how was it worded?
We got a great question from Jana, who's on the Slack channel. And I'll be completely honest, if Jana's listening to this one back, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, I hadn't really thought about this. And I was, how has geometric figuring since the 11th century impacted design teaching today? And I had to follow up with Jana because I was a little bit ignorant in this space. I understand about the whole kind of deep connection to our past and why we do things currently. But their whole thing was like, what design narratives are rooted in geometric figuring and whose expense and detriment? And when I spoke to Jana a little bit more on Slack in a private message overnight, they pointed me to a few things that basically said, well, basically, the tools applied in design have been orchestrated to promote religious thinking. And at this point, I'm Catholic, and Jerry is probably similar to me. I'm like, oh, here we go. Here someone's going to talk about God and religion. And I instantly start to repel. But I was like, okay, I was leaning into this conversation. And a particular narrative and viewpoint, this tool has been used to colonize the peoples of Europe and later the colonies, or today's ex-colonies. What is it about design that promotes Christian thinking and the cost, expense, and the detriment of everyone else? So,
yeah, you know, I didn't understand the initial phrasing of the, because I'd never heard of it, but certainly the basic underlying theme that question is exploring, I think is absolutely correct, and I think is the foundation of why we are destroying the earth. I think the modern religions are a core driver of the reason why we are destroying the earth, because the Abrahamic religions are founded on human superiority and human separatism, and that, you know, we have souls and nobody else has. They're all, you know, we're special, we're worth it. Nobody else, no other else has feelings, only us. So they've essentially said, you know, here you are, waste the earth, it's up to you. Everything is, you know, there for you. Everything is for your convenience. It's all about you, and God is even in the image of you. So, like, you know, so we've created this, you know, structure which legitimizes our ability to destroy the planet that we live on. You know, and I think the modern religions are a core pillar, you know, in the colonization, as I was telling you, in the ships that went to destroy all the natives of South America or to enslave the Africans or went to Australia. The ships had three groups of people on them. They had the soldiers, the scientists, and the priests. And the priests legitimized what the soldiers and the scientists did. So I think if we are to have a hope to fix the extraordinary mess we have made of the world, we have to first and foremost recognize that we are part of the world, and that, you know, in the broadest sense of things, what goes around comes around. And I have a specific example of that. I've been tracking a lot of e-waste, electronic waste, and reading up a lot about it the last couple of years. And every year we're producing about 50 million tons of e-waste, which is enough to build the Great Wall of China. Right? And it's doubling every 15 years. So in another 15 years, we'll be able to build two Great Walls of China every year from e-waste. Much less than 20% of it is properly recycled. And a huge amount of it is actually illegally or semi-legally exported from rich countries to poor countries like Ghana or Nigeria or Pakistan, where it is burnt in open pits and, you know, and dumped in, you know, in rivers and lakes. And the irony of this is that so much e-waste is being dumped and so much of it is seeping into the water table. It's going back out into the seas and it's polluting the fish that we in the rich countries are eating. So we're eating our laptops, you know, we're eating our smartphones, some of the trace elements in them. We thought, you know, we think we're so clever in Europe and North America. We think we can always export the crap to the global south and that the poison will stay there and it'll only poison poor people. But because everything is interconnected in this world, it's beginning to we've done so much poisoning that it's actually coming back to us in the process. So it's either a wake up moment that says, you know, this intense individualism and selfishness that has driven so much of culture in the last 100, 200 years, or maybe 50, 60 years in particular, that's going to destroy life on Earth. And if we don't create a system which looks at everything, the water, the soil, and tries to design in the context of those sustainable issues and boundaries, there won't be a planet. There will be a planet. There just won't be a livable planet in another 100 years. You mean the speed is exponential. In the last 25 years, humans, of all the CO2 that we have created since we emerged out of the swamps, we have created 50% of it in the last 25 years. I mean, if that's not scary, I mean, if you think about that, the modern human species may be 300,000 years or whatever. So we have created 50% of the damage in 25 years. It's exponential. Our destructive power is growing exponentially. And if we don't radically shift our thinking, yeah.
Transform and shift. I mean, like, it seems to be that there's a huge disassociation between what we do, like in terms of our behaviours, both online, but also like in the real world as well, and its impact, because it's invisible. It's, you know, we recycle, yeah. And we're like, yeah, okay, I've done my bit, and off it goes. And we spoke a little bit more around this in another episode with Joe McLeod in terms of ends of experiences and what does that look like on This Is HCD, which will be coming out now in the next week or so. But online, it seems that for a long time, and you've spoken about this in Worldwide Waste on your podcast and in your book as well, for a long time, people perceived online, you know, website design or UX design or product design to be the greener of the kind of approaches to design, like, because it's, you're not wasting paper, we're not cutting down trees. And that has been perpetuated for a long time. And I fell into that trap as well. So what is it about the course Earth Experience Design? Who is it for? And what kind of things can people expect to get out of it?
As you indicate there, you know, one of the things to really reconnect actions to really understand behaviors. So there's in the book Worldwide Waste, there the final or near last chapter, there's four things that I say that we can do to try and make things better, or try and move in the right direction. And the first one is about worth. You know, is it worth it? So, you know, we'd be looking at true worth and true cost in the environment. So I'll come back to that in a few minutes. But second one is the weight, that, you know, digital has a weight, and the heavier it is, the more polluting it is. So, you know, a great challenge from digital design is to design the lightest weight. How can we design with the lightest weight possible in the process? So there are numerous techniques, and looking at the options, and, you know, and maybe one thing you hear, so the small decision, but a decision that we could make now is if we turn our cameras off, because I don't think our cameras have been recording, just a simple thing that I say about an audio. If we speak for an hour, an audio, that will take about 30 megabytes of data. Whereas if we speak for an hour with video, that's about 300 megabytes of data. So we could have scenarios where, you know, you start your meeting and 5 or 10 minutes you leave the video on because it's nice to get to see people. But then you move to audio. You're always looking for the lightest option. And audio is lighter than video. And you know what as well? Psychologically, it's lighter for a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of stresses. There's a lot of studies coming out. People don't like watching themselves constantly seeing their own face coming back rather than other people's faces. So there's a lot of stuff that light for the planet is also light for you. You know, and people. So lightness, design for lightness, you know, design, you know, lose weight in the design process. So that's the second one. So the first one is it worth it? You know, really asking in it and asking that question at an earth experience level, you know, is it worth it to the earth, all the materials, etc. Second one, you know, to lose weight wherever we can in the design process. And a connected one, that's often interrelated, is then waste. Eliminate waste. So wherever there's waste in the process, clearly identifiable, you know, remove that. So a simple example of that might be, you know, in web design, you're sending down 300 KB of CSS for a page, but it only needs 12. You know, that page doesn't need 300 KB. The layout of that page only requires 12, but you send it down as a package because you're too lazy, or it's part of a framework, or stuff like that. So constantly eliminating waste in the design process. And there's two areas, as there is with the weight area. There's design waste, and there's use waste. So there's the waste that occurs during the design process, and then there's the waste that would occur in the process of using that thing that you have actually designed. And so that's the third one. Then the fourth one, You know, this it would be looking at don't do it. Wait, what I call wait. That often, you know, the best thing to do is to do nothing or create nothing, or you know, to maintain rather than to create. We have been brought up in this tense culture of creation, and the very act of creation creates negative things as well. And a lot of times there's enough there already. And we should, you know, take time and really think more about things and think about, is there stuff we can reuse, or is there stuff that's already out there? So it's a kind of working with the people around, you know, helping evolve a new design philosophy that is, you know, contrary to this modern consumptive, extractive, planned obsolescence, you know, nothing lasts type of design philosophy, that everything is so surface that you know, we need to change, you know, the culture and the way we think about things.
I mean, if there's people listening out there that are user experience designers or product designers, or just anyone that is in the role of creating new things or new pieces of value for their business, what can they expect to take away from it in terms of actionable things? Is there is it an interactive workshop, Jerry? How do you see it working out?
If you look at the principles around how would you, you know, design out waste in a digital environment? So what are if we took an example of, say, in a web environment, what are the major areas where you would discover waste in an environment? Why, say, as an average web page gone from 100 kilobytes to 4 megabytes in the process? And what are the things to really look at if you're looking for the waste? And a lot of them are simple and obvious around the images and the treatment of the images and the formats and stuff like that. And then there's looking at stuff that I talked about, the CSS or the JavaScript and various other HTML is less. Obviously, use of videos, very, very intense. But looking at the various aspects, but broadly coming to say, if the outcome from this, because it's just a 3 hours type of session, is more, here's a model or a way of thinking about the problem that, you know, even if we left saying, you know, well, the number one thing I'm going to pursue is waste in the design process. And I'm going to look at, like, I'll show a model of how to actually measure the weight of something. So I had a scenario there. I worked with some people. I said, how do you measure the weight of content? And basically, or the weight of practically anything, an image or whatever, you measure the weight based on the device upon which it is created or device upon which it is used. So that's where the weight occurs, because essentially the weight of the object itself, the megabytes itself, is very light in relation to its overall impact. But the weight that actually occurs during the creation process. So I worked with a bunch of content professionals to try and get a average sense of how long it takes to create, say, 1,000 words of content. And we estimated that would take about 20 hours in relation to creation, in relation to editing, drafting, sign-off, reviews and sign-off. So they estimate 20 hours. So all of those 20 hours occur on devices, typically on laptops in the process. So then I did work on to understand the CO2 impact of a laptop over its lifetime in the process. So manufacturing a laptop will create somewhere in the region of 300 kb of CO2. And then you got, you know, so typically most of the waste in a laptop will occur during its manufacturing process, about 80%. So then just like you would for a car or furniture, you depreciate or you allocate that laptop across its useful life. So I did some calculations about how many hours a day would that laptop be used, over what would its lifespan be, etc. And I came up with certain figures. So looking at the it's an allocation to its manufacturing CO2, an allocation to its use CO2, came up with figures that roughly an hour working on a laptop would be about 110 grams of CO2 in a process. Now, if you were working on a desktop with a big screen, that could be 250 or 300 grams because desktops are much more intense in their processing capacity. They tend to have much bigger screens, and screens consume a lot more energy, etc. So there are models that you can build, and you can say, well, if we did this in a laptop, it would be about 100 grams. So if you've got 20 hours, well, that's about 2 kg. You know, then you would estimate things like, well, how many times is this going to be looked at? It's going to be looked at. Will it be looked at on a smartphone, or will it be looked on a laptop? Like an hour on a smartphone is about 16 grams because it's much less energy intense. You know, a smartphone is about 60 kg to manufacture versus of CO2 versus. So there is a rule that you can see. Always use the lightest device. If you can design on a laptop, design on a laptop. I used to use big screens. I've stopped using big screens in my design pro. I got rid of them. I gave them away to people. So, you know, there's commitments that you can make decisions in the design process to design in the lightest possible way. Then if you wanted to look at lightness in use, well, you would say 1,000 words takes about 4 minutes to read. Well, could we do it in 500 words? You know, because those 4 minutes are consuming energy and need to be allocated over the useful life of that device. If you could, being succinct is light. You know, if you're, and I'm not saying don't have video, but video is thousands of times heavier than is text, and hundreds of times heavier than is audio. So when you're thinking, when you're doing video, you're really thinking about every second, because a 4 minute video could be 40, 50 megabytes, 100 megabytes easily in the process. So when you're doing and you're asking, do we really need video for this? Because I've watched loads of people. My core work over the years has been observing people use websites. And in many situations, videos don't help at all. You know, they're not useful. We did a lot of work with Cisco and observed network engineers trying to figure out configuration problems with routers or data centers or whatever. And, you know, they wanted the technical documentation. They wanted code samples. They wanted, you know, videos were a nightmare for them. You know, so video, just because it's got higher, production formats, doesn't mean it has higher communication formats. Often the lightest option. I was working with a person who did a lot of analytics for accountants. And he was talking about how all the graphs and charts and etc. And then he discovered that really, when the accountant logged into their portal, what they really wanted to see was a text that said, budget is 7% higher than target. Take these three actions. Like they didn't, the actual text was much more useful to the accountant than throwing 10 charts at them, which contained, I have to look at these 10 charts and now figure out the budget is 7% over from looking at the charts. But actually, we can think light and also create very powerful, you know, I think we become intoxicated by the idea that we have these powerful tools, you know, and we just want more power, just like we want more, you know, iPod SUVs as well, which we're just intoxicated by power. And it's not good. It's not good for us, ultimately. It's certainly not good for the planet. You know, 40% of new cars being sold now are SUVs. I mean, these are people killers. They're planet killers. I mean, the amount of deaths on the roads is increasing. The chances of you dying if you get hit by an SUV are 10 times, 100 times higher than if you get hit by a car. So we're creating these monsters of machinery for no purpose other than our sense of power. And we have to go, we have to somehow come back from that addiction to power and ego and vanity and achieve a certain sense of balance. And this is in the design process. I'm trying to develop these principles of lightness and principles of waste elimination. And if you can bring these principles to play in a lot of design. And as I said, you're designing for, there are two areas, design for the use, so there's the actual designing the thing, but you want to measure the use of the product, because that's where a lot of the waste occurs as well. If you design a very heavy web page, it's having a big impact on thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, but on the metrics thing there, being able to measure and build that narrative out to your employer or your organization and say, well, actually, what we're building is not being used. It's so currently, I know from speaking to Joe McLeod, lots of our physical devices that are at home that are inanimate, like fridges and so forth, they don't have any metrics associated with them. So those organizations don't know what's being used and not used. So in some instances, metrics are completely required to help enable that narrative to change within the organizations. What do you think? I know you said like there's a huge cost there, but I think if you're thinking of it in terms of the digital realm, I know what you mean. Like analytics and stuff can add to the page weight and slow it down, and then there's a cost associated with it.
That's an interesting thing, you know, because, you know, I've been involved in the web since the mid-90s, and it used to be web trends back in 96, 97. And, you know, I remember, you know, spending years in meetings discussing analytics. And at one stage, I remember looking around the room, and there was about 10 or 12 people in the room, this big organization, huge website, you know. And, you know, I was just thinking to myself, this is total, absolute bullshit. You know, here we are discussing the analytics, you know, and none of us have a clue what they mean. And we're just pretending we're being intelligent here. Oh, the page views went up, or the visits, you know, and they spent this amount of time on the page, and this abandonment rate and that abandonment rate. And if people were honest, genuinely honest, 99% of people that I've met have no clue what they're talking about. So most analytics is actually bullshit.
Agreed.
So of course there are certain environments where it's critical. But the amount of analytics that we produce, 99.9% of it is absolute crap and is absolute useless. I mean, think of the madness of how would you use analytics if you were a health website in a pandemic? You know, oh, visits are going up, we're really popular. You know, like, I mean, what does that mean? Oh, they're spending loads of time on our page. I wonder, do they have COVID? You know, what sort of craziness? Most analytics, they could be telling you the total opposite things. You know, they spent a long time on the page.
Yeah.
Were they confused? Or was it a really good page? Like, most of the time they were confused. Because I spend, like, I'd look at analytics, and then I'd look at people using the website. And, like, the analytics would be, like, telling a totally different story to the actual reality of people. So I think we should depend less on analytics and more on observation of human behavior if we really want to understand what's happening and what's not happening in an environment. But again, I'm not disagreeing in the sense that there may be situations, but I just find we don't think enough. You know, we just don't, we don't make wise decisions. We make stupid, quick decisions, you know. New tool.
Oh, absolutely.
More. Yeah. Let's get loads of analytics. And sometime later, we'll figure out a way to analyze them. Most analytics is absolute garbage. Turn them off.
I know. There's, I know people listening to this podcast now will be like, okay, I'm sold on this, but I work in an organization that has absolutely no plan, or really like my boss doesn't show that they care about the situation. And I want to call out a quote by Ilya Prigogine, who John Thackeray alluded me to a number of years ago. And he said that in an unstable, complex system, small islands of coherence has the potential to change the whole system. And I remember when John quoted that, I hadn't heard that before. I probably should have, but I hadn't. He just basically, it explains that even at your own being, at your own self level, you have the power to change the system. So you coming into this course, even if your organization doesn't really display any of the signals or appetite of wanting to change or thinking like this, but you bringing this in and helping maybe inform one other person that you work with, you can start a movement from within. And that's something that's really, really important to us that this is doing, and this is HCD, that it's just not always, you might completely disassociate yourself with the values of your organization if you're working for an FMCG or whatever it is. This course is going to give you the capability to help shape the narrative, to help kind of transform that complex system that you find yourselves in. And that's what Jerry's created. He's created a 3-hour interactive workshop that really focuses on that, that really helps shift the conversation into the more the actionable state. And I know for one, Jerry, I'm really excited about it.
19th,
is it the 11th of January? I should know this one off the top of my head. 19th of January, Jerry. So it's only around the corner. You'll only be getting over your Christmas dinner at that stage. And I know for people listening in, if they're clicking on it, it's in the show notes. There's a link to this course in the show notes. We're donating €25 of each ticket to a not-for-profit working for environmental change. In Brazil, they're doing quite a lot of work in this space, Jerry. Do you want to talk to us a little bit more around what it looks like over there?
Brazil is a very complex society. It's got
absolutely
polar opposites. It's got, you know, a basic maniac in charge trying to destroy the Amazon. And then
absolutely,
it's got many others trying to, you know, really, you know, save and it's interesting to see, you know, we always look down on recycling. You know, you can see in a society as humans, we are contemptuous of recycling. You know, every evening, if you look out the window, you'll see a bunch of guys walking down the street with these carrying, you know, these big carts, and the carts are full of cardboard, or either they're full of plastic. And basically, those poor guys have spent the day going around rubbish tips or whatever around the city. Either they specialize in different things and collecting cardboard or recycling. And you know, in Brazil, you can fix practically everything because there's such a huge difference in the wealth of society. There's extraordinary wealth and there's extraordinary poverty. So a lot of the products of the wealthy that when they get rid of them, you know, end up being used by the poor. So there's massive workshops everywhere to take things apart, and so Brazilians are tremendously, you know, innovative in relation to fixing things. But here's what we want to do with them in the West. We want to, you know, if we followed the model of capitalism, then all of that fixing would disappear, and we'd just start buying apples and, you know, buy and just throwing stuff away. So what the model of success in society is, you know, we are contemptuous of those people who recycle. We want to get to a state where we recycle nothing, you know, and we just throw all the plastic away. That's what we regard as success. And, you know, there has to be a different model. And the idea of, we talk about a little bit in the course of reuse, designing stuff. You know, there's loads of great stuff happening around design systems. You know, design stuff that can be reused, design stuff that can be fixed. Dell has just announced a new laptop where I think they've gone from 16 screws to 4 screws. you know, in the process. So they've made a whole range of decisions in the design process to make this laptop fixable, to make this laptop repairable. So we as designers of digital things should be asking that the question, how will this be disassembled? Can it be disassembled? What are the components of this which could be reused rather than us constantly reinventing, you know, new things? So I think, you know, this, you know, the cultural change, hopefully this course will set us on a, you know, help in some way. But it's like what you said, just finishing up about John Tacker said that somebody else said, nothing humans have made cannot be changed by humans. Anything human made can be changed by humans.
Yeah, there's a few things in that. Like, and there's just touching on the topic there that you said about ends and so forth of that. Joe McLeod, who has written Ends, the book, and now Endineering, is working with us at This Is Doing Now and creating their own course, so people will be able to get a much better understanding how they can take this, the learnings from Joe's books, and into action. So we're going to be working with Joe on that. And then there's another course from Belina Raffi on the essentials of thrivability, which starts, I believe, in February or March. Yeah, I think it's the March the 24th, from recollection, on the principles and nature to making organizations a force for good. So there's a few courses that we're working on at the moment, but the first one that I believe is going to set the way for the rest of 2022 is with Jerry McGovern on Earth Experience Design, which, Jerry, help me on the date there again. January the 19th, isn't it?
January 19th. I'm pretty sure. Let me just...
It is. I'm on the website here. I see January the 19th.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. And that Ends sounds brilliant as well from Joe. I mean, that, you know, his book is brilliant and brilliant, a brilliant concept. And, you know, that it's part... So maybe there's a mood of change. I mean, when you say what's going to change, you think, you know, nothing I can do has any big impact. But if we're lucky enough to be part of a wave or a movement, and we're all, you know, but doing nothing is not an option.
Absolutely. I mean, being active and talking about this thing is what we need. So even if your organization, as I said, is not really aligned to your own personal values, join Jerry on January the 19th for this course, because it'll help you build that narrative and bring a fact sheet almost of material to that conversation within your organization, because action needs to happen now. This isn't something that's going to be put on hold for another 15 or 20 years. We need to do something about this now. We need to change our business models. And what better way to start off the new year than with Jerry McGovern on January the 19th? Jerry, it's all, as always, it's a gift speaking to you. It's not even a pleasure. It's a gift. If people want to follow you on Twitter, what's the best? What's your URL? Is it, or your handle?
Jerry, just Jerry McGovern, Jerry. And you know, just to say as well, what you're doing, you know, this is, it's part of a really good movement, a movement for good. You know, because we designed our way into this problem, so let's design our way out.
Absolutely.
Of it.
Jerry, stay safe over there. Have a great Christmas. We're looking forward to catching up with you now when you get back into Ireland, in probably the middle of next year at some point, I'm sure. But, like, stay safe.
Thank you, and stay safe as well.